From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Away from the office this afternoon, so no update of the commodity markets. However, we will go through a FarmDoc Daily article about the consolidation within the fertilizer industry, how that trails back through what is a bit fragmented in the retailer side, and consolidation within the farm sizes across the United States, particularly in row crops. We'll do that with Enrique Monaco, who is the lead author for an article posted to the FarmDoc Daily website, and then a researcher that was referenced in that article, Jim McDonald, who is at the University of Maryland, an ag economist there, who will help us explore how big a large farm is in the United States, at least as it's related to row crops and livestock. The number, by the way, is small compared to what you think a large farm might be, 2,000 acres. And that means that the people sitting next to you in the pew at church or that are going to school with your kids that you know and think of as just a farmer in the U.S., well, by the stats, they're a large farm, and I think that has some complications related to the consumers and the farmers and policies that are developed in Washington, D.C. We won't talk about those today, but probably we'll take them up in future editions of the Closing Market Report. So stay with us. I think you should find it an interesting conversation.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We are now joined by Enrique Monaco. He, along with Nick Paulson, Gary Schnitke, and Carl Zuloff, have penned an article for the FarmDoc Daily website. This one is titled Consolidation Trends in the U.S. Nitrogen Fertilizer Industry. Enrique, thank you for joining us. I know that this was put together, of course, in response to the Strait of Hormuz and the large increase in the price, particularly of nitrogen, across the planet and in the United States, although fertilizer prices had been moving up to begin with. I suppose part of that was at least the thought behind this particular article, as consolidation maybe the devil behind that increase. Am I correct that that's where you started from when you were taking a look at the fertilizer industry?
For us economists, I guess, when you look at the fertilizer industry more broadly or other ag inputs, this is the consolidation that's been there. It's nothing that started right now with the Strait of Hormuz, right? But once you have a shock like that on prices, this is where you know, you start looking again and relooking at things. But to your point, it's not specifically this shock that happened to fertilizer prices. This is not something that it's consolidation, the issue. Okay. It was, as we are all aware and discussed that, right? But the consolidation has been going since that's specifically here in the US on the nitrogen industry. It's been happening since mid-2000s, it's nothing that started right now with the conflict or that because of that.
Let's lay out fertilizer in the U.S. to begin with, and then talk a little bit about the industry and what's produced domestically, and what consumption looks like here. So, how much of the total global fertilizer footprint or all fertilizers does the U.S. consume?
So that's about 10 or 15% of global fertilizer consumption.
And then when you break it out by NPK or nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, how is the U.S. reliant on itself and or imports from other countries?
So that will be a very different picture depending on the nutrient, as you pointed out. But for potassium specifically, the import reliance is very high, and Canada is the main partner. But when it comes to phosphate and nitrogen, those numbers are much lower, 13 and 6%. That means that the U.S. has the capacity, and let's bring it back to nitrogen here. It has a good domestic production capacity in terms of ammonia production or which is used for other nitrogen products as well.
There is a graphic in, or a couple of them, but a graphic in the FarmDoc Daily article that shows nitrogen production and capacity and utilization. I thought it was fairly interesting that the capacity within the nation in the early 2000s was about what it is today, but there was a sharp drop in the mid-2000s by 2010, 2009, something like that was our lowest level. Do we know why that took place as it relates to the research you've been doing?
So natural gas is the main input for nitrogen fertilizer production. And that was primarily high prices, which make production in-house more expensive. And therefore, the industry contracted a little bit. And after that 2009-12 period where natural gas prices started to rebound or decrease, and that facilitated or encouraged production again to happen. So that's primarily, I would say. So input prices, or input in that case, natural gas input for fertilizer production prices, was the main driver, I would say, there.
The point, I suppose, there is that natural gas was driving the reduction in total capacity. I don't know about closure of plants, but plants, well, clearly closure of plants too, because capacity was going down. At that same time frame from the 2000s to today, with that dip in the middle, there was consolidation with the industry. Can you tell me about the share of the industry and who controls it now, and how that's changed over time?
Sure. If you look since 2000, there was a decrease in total number of firms, but also plants operating. When it comes to who has the ammonia specifically here, production capacity in the U.S., that would be primarily CF Industries and Nutrien would be the top two. Those together here will account for roughly 55-60%. The top four companies would account for 70% of, in terms of ammonia production capacity. Okay, that's not necessarily market share, but that's one indicative here. So 70% is what top four manufacturers on in terms of production capacity, ammonia production capacity.
As it relates to consolidation in the industry, are there so few players that the Department of Justice would be interested in looking at them?
So I think there's always an interest of looking at them, right? In this case, it's important. The Department of Justice guideline for merger guidelines, they have a number here, which they calculate this Herfindahl-Hirschman index, which is measures really how consolidated is an industry. And for merger guidelines, it's what they put out, right? But they have a cutout at above 0.18 to be considered an industry that has this index above 0.18 would be considered highly consolidated or highly concentrated. And that would be the case of the fertilizer industry now. So that's also another point that I want to bring is that, again, this is one way to measure consolidation and its impacts, okay? But I'm just saying that you got to put that in a broader context when we evaluate that, not simply this guideline as a cutout for good or bad or anything like that, okay? And lastly, too, this guideline was updated in 2023, okay? If you were to have the same industry as this right now, but with a previous guideline, it would be considered not considered highly concentrated. The guideline changed and made the industry now considered highly concentrated.
The integration across the board from the farm to the manufacturer of these fertilizers has changed over that time as well. For instance, you write about the retailers. Consolidation has happened there too.
So when you look at the fertilizer industry, we think about manufacturers and then retail and then like right farmers using it. We do have some data on the manufacturers And that's where we looked at this consolidation index. That's at a manufacturing level. The retail market, it's something that we don't have a lot of data to work on. Okay, so that's a somewhere of a gap that we have in analyzing it. But we do know that some big players such as Nutrien, they have a big footprint in retail. I think Nutrien, according to them, they own, I think it's 21% of the retail industry in the U.S., the retail. And so although it might be there, that's not really there. There's not a ton of data available for us to look into that segment of the supply chain.
So this all leads me to one of the conclusions I think that you come to, which is the consolidation is just a natural outcome of a mature industry?
So what we try to say there is when you think about the fertilizer industry, you might think that products from one company or another are different, but in essence, it's really a commodity, right? Fertilizer, very little differentiation. And when you think about that kind of industry, it's primarily a cost play. So if you have a lower cost, you have this competitive advantage, right? And over time, what we would expect in this kind of industry, that's what we mean in a mature industry, is that it sorts out the inefficient ones, right? And the low cost ones would stay and survive, and of course absorb the high cost ones. So when you think of a mature industry, specifically a commodity industry that competes where the competitive factor is cost of production, that's what we would think about consolidation as being one of the you know outcomes here.
So there are fewer players as manufacturers, there are fewer players as retailers, and it appears from the numbers, of course, that there are fewer players and larger players on the farm side too.
Oh yeah, so yeah, on the manufacturing we do have fewer players. The retail is where it's kind of blurred. We don't know for sure. We don't have a ton of data, but at the farm level, that's also a trend that it's been well documented in the industry. And since 1987, if you look at that, large farms, and here large farms, there is also lots of ways to define that. In this particular case, we're talking about operations with 2,000 or more acres in crops, okay? So in 1987, they were responsible for operating 15% of the U.S. cropland, and that number has risen to 41% by 2017. So it is happening. And when you think about agriculture, farming, it shares some of the characteristics that the fertilizer industry does, right? It's a commodity. It's farmers are competing in cost, right? So whoever has the cost advantage is the one that it's making a profit. And if you're not efficient, not competitive there, you're out in the long run, right? And farmers with this cost competitive advantage will then incorporate them, right? Economies of scale, we know that that's a big factor in this kind of industry in cutting costs. So that's what happens in this kind of industries.
That was Enrique Monaco. I spoke with him about an article that he posted to the FarmDoc Daily website, along with his colleagues Nick Paulson, Gary Schnitke, and Carl Zulov. The article is titled Consolidation Trends in the U.S. Nitrogen Fertilizer Industry. We'll pick up on that last point in just a moment, but I do want to run back through it because this was something that jumped out at me as I was reading through the article, and there are always references at the bottom of these FarmDoc Daily articles, and one of them was to a consolidation article in U.S. agriculture that looked at the farm sizes from the 1980s through the present day. It was done by Jim McDonald, who is an agricultural economist now at the University of Maryland, but was working in ERS at other periods during his career. And he was the one, from my perspective at least, that framed a large-sized row crop farm as 2,000 acres. It's actually a USDA-generated category, but not one that we normally see from the outside world. Generally speaking, it's based off of gross revenue, so 2,000 acres is something that is categorized in the Census of Agriculture. $300,000 in gross revenue, by the way, is considered a large farm. So I called Jim at the University of Maryland and asked him why and how it was that he decided to take a look at that particular number.
Okay. Well, for one thing, if we're doing sales, and I've done a good deal of work just using sales and dollar numbers, you have to be able to adjust for inflation. And that is really tricky in agriculture because you get really different rates of inflation often for different crops. And you need to control for inflation if you're trying to talk about shifts in size. With acreage, you know, that stays, you don't really have the inflation problem. And we also know that consolidation for almost all crops has taken the form of shifts towards fewer but much larger farms. And so we're able to get consistent data over a fairly long period of time to track that across states, counties, and across commodities. I had also been involved in running an annual large-scale farm survey for the Economic Research Service when I was there that is drawn from the five-year Census of Agriculture. So I had worked closely with the Economic Research Service and the National Ag Statistics Service on surveys. So I had a pretty good grasp of what was going on. And I thought that we could do a lot by digging into the farm level confidential records and summarizing in a different way what we see there. So we've used those types of records to build up to changes in consolidation for crops and for livestock, going back to the early 1980s, which is when we had access to some very good census data.
Yeah, so the work that the FarmDoc team reports is just kind of in a couple of lines, and it says in 1987, large farms, and this would be your work, were responsible for operating 15% of all U.S. cropland, compared to 41% by 2017. There are censuses beyond that. I'm sure you're going to work on those in the near future, as you've told me already. But why is it, when I asked about the size of a large farmland, you were using 2,000 acres. For instance, in 1987, I think grain farmers might go, yeah, that's a big farm, but today they probably would not.
The public data that we report for USDA generally has cutoffs of 2,000 and 5,000. And so in my summaries, I wanted to keep consistent with some of the public data that we have. So we use 2,000 acres as a top cutoff. And of course, in the beginning, as you point out, there isn't that many acres in the 2,000 and above category. By 2017, as you say, it's around 40% of all cropland acres in the United States was in farms that farmed at least 2,000 acres. That's probably grown since then. So the choice of categories we took is really driven by, you know, existing USDA categories. We wanted to build within that. Now, we did do some work drawing out much larger operations, that is crop farms with 5,000, 10,000, up to 25,000 acres. That doesn't feature as prominently. I can tell you what we saw over that period was a corresponding large shift of acreage towards farms in, say, the 2,000 to 5,000 and the 5,000 to 10,000 category. We didn't see much of a shift in 25,000 acres or more, like what I would think of as extraordinarily large farms. But we did do a little summary, and yes, we see a significant shift of acreage to put it 2,000 all the way up to 25,000 acres in a farm.
When will you start work on the most recent census data?
Well, I would have liked to have had it done by now. We made a request. So What I have to do is I make a request to the National Agricultural Statistics Service, the USDA, that runs the Census of Agriculture. I make a data request to them that is pretty much the same as the requests I've made in the past and worked on. NAS has tightened its review requirements, and it has a smaller staff than it used to, so it's going to take longer. I expect to get my data request fulfilled by the end of this summer or early fall. I certainly hope that. And my intention then is to turn that around pretty quickly. So I should have good information by the end of this year, the end of 2026, and I'll be speaking with the Economic Research Service, who I still work with, as to how we want to publish that sort of information. So we're working on the 2022 now, much later than I would have hoped, but there we are.
Is your inclination to include the higher farm size limits?
Yeah, that's one I need to talk about with my co-authors at ERS. It's an important issue. I have some technical issues with how NAS reports really large farms. And in particular, I'm not quite confident for the very large, 25,000 acres and above, whether I'm getting one large kind of integrated farming business or whether I'm getting combined places that have multiple farms across multiple states. It's not entirely clear how that's reported in the census, and I want to be real. I want to have good confidence before I try to write something up on the very largest farms. But we're likely, I think, to try to push what we've had into at least that 2,000 to 5,000 category, and 5 to 10, and 10 and above, something like that. So we've had that material all along, and we can extend it a little bit more. We're going to see if technically we're able to do it.
Well, good luck, and thank you. Hopefully I'll check in with you to see how the work progresses.
Sure thing.
Jim MacDonald is an agricultural economist at the University of Maryland. I spoke with him about the size of farms in the United States, particularly what is categorized as a large farm, 2,000 acres and above. And hopefully in the future, we'll continue to think about that size, which really, if you ask farmers, most won't consider that a particularly large farm in the Corn Belt for sure. And apparently across the whole of the United States, because Jim tells us that's what those numbers are looking at. We also discussed with Enrique Monaco consolidation within the fertilizer industry, and that was what spurred the conversation with Jim MacDonald about the size of U.S. farms. Altogether, I think it's important as it's related to how consumers view farms and the policies that Washington, D.C. is designing for them. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Online, on demand, at WILLAG.org. You have a good afternoon. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.